Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Chertletaub with the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. We now begin part two of our podcast with Michael Horowitz, the Inspector General at the U.S. Department of Justice. Before we begin, let me reiterate something I said at the start of the first podcast. If you're listening to this hoping for juicy bits of information about the Clinton email investigation or any of the other IG's investigations, this really isn't the place. Our goal here is to take a look at the investigations he's led from the perspective of a compliance officer and to benefit from his experience conducting large-scale, high-profile investigations. We hope you enjoy the podcast. So now, as you're doing your investigations, you're talking to all these people, you're collecting documents, how do you determine, need to know, and to what extent information acquired during the investigation should be shared with others in the organization? I mean, typically, I think you wait until it's reported out, but, you know, whether it's here or in your past life doing external investigations.
So one of the things that I think is very important for us in the IG office and for any compliance officer is, if we find something is going wrong, a program isn't being well run, particularly if it's a serious problem, issue, or if we find someone's engaged in misconduct that's significant, we regularly make sure that management knows about that so they can fix it as soon as possible. We don't want to wait necessarily till the end of our report to make sure they can fix something. In fact, many times our reports will say, we told them about this as we saw this problem, and since then, they've taken the following steps to address it, so that we give credit where credit should be given, that they were responsive and that they took action. But I think it's very important, you know, our responsibility as an IG is to make sure department programs where we find problems are fixed. And so we're going to take steps to make sure that occurs, including on occasion letting Congress know as well if it's the kind of issue that Congress would need to take legislative action or other action to address.
But bottom line is, if there's something that can be fixed along the way that absolutely should be, that, for example, there's still something inappropriate going on, get it stopped. Don't let the finished report.
Or, for example, if we find an individual has engaged in wrongdoing and there needs to be steps taken to mitigate the risk from that person, we'll make sure that's known. For example, if we find out an agent has lied, stolen money, same with a prosecutor, those people, if we don't say something, may continue to do other investigations. Mm-hmm. The department needs to take action, or the FBI or the agency, to mitigate the risk of that person. It may mean they can't do anything yet because our investigation isn't done and we can't report out the full facts yet. So they may have to put those people in another position for the time being. But I can't sit there and let them continue to be law enforcement arresting people or taking action if I know they're engaged
in doing that. And likewise, in a company, if somebody's, you find along the way is stealing money, you don't say, I will let them steal money till I finish my investigation.
Correct.
You got to stop it. Okay. So do you have any recommendations to help internal investigators maintain the confidentiality over sources of information, including the prevention of leaks actually by people maybe involved in the investigation or have knowledge of it, including people, you know, who've just been interviewed, who are going to be very tempted when they walk out because everyone's going to say, what did they ask you about?
Right. Well, we've got, first of all, by statute for whistleblowers, we have an obligation to maintain their information and not disseminate it or disclose it. But for witnesses generally and in terms of leaks and concerns about leaks, couple things. I think it's important to let witnesses know if you are going to, if you're concerned about them talking, to tell them that and make it quite clear to them what your expectation is and what you are asking of them. And obviously you need to make sure what you're asking of them is appropriate to ask them. In terms of controlling information and leaks and disclosures, obviously, it's a risk for us in the work we do, whether it's a high-profile matter or less high-profile matter. But one of the things that we try and do is make sure that the people who know the information are the people who actually need to know because they're on the team. We don't widely disseminate what's going on in our work within our organization while it's going on. We make sure we respect the confidentiality of the information. And even when, there is a high-profile matter, we took additional precautionary steps on, for example, this most recent election year review that we did. We actually numbered copies of reports. We tracked who came in to review it when it was time to review it in draft, so that we could do our best to discourage leaks and disclosures. I think it's very important to be able to make sure the team knows, your entire organization understands, until a report is issued, it's not final. It's only final, you've only reached your conclusions, I've only reached my conclusions, when it goes public. Everything before that's preliminary. Things can change. You talk to witnesses all the way through, and you want to keep that open mind, and you want to make sure it's not written in stone until it's ready to hit send and go out the door.
And then the other problem is, how do you keep people at bay who want to know what the investigation is going to find before it's done? I mean, you know you're going to wait until the end, but others have made their decisions, or maybe they don't know and they're just dying to know.
Yeah. So in, for example, this most recent review in the Fast and Furious review, for factual findings that we were making along the way, I did not brief the Attorney General or the Deputy Attorney General or members of Congress, which we wouldn't normally do in our reviews. We would wait until the end. Again, unless there was a systemic issue, personnel issue, we obviously would let them know about that. But it's very important for people to understand. And fortunately, myself, my predecessors here have always had the support of the Attorneys General and the Deputy Attorneys General on this, which is what I just indicated. We're not going to be briefing you about general fact-finding we're making until we have an understanding of it. But you should know that if we find issues, I obviously will tell you. So it's not as if it's a blank space until the report goes out, but it's an appreciation or respect, particularly for our independence, and making sure that we're not seen as being influenced in any way by leadership.
And it sounds like it's also, you need to have people understand that there's a process here, it must be followed, will be followed. And it also sounds like you have to set the precedent that whenever we're doing an investigation, you wait till the end.
Absolutely. And this is our election report was all about process, or not all about it, but a big part of it was about process. Process matters. Mm-hmm. Following your regular process as closely as you can, there are going to sometimes be exceptions, is important to do. It ensures consistency in your work. You gain the respect of the leadership of your own team, knowing that there's not this sort of ad hoc deviations going on. And it gives you the foundation on which to explain why you're doing and what you're doing.
Now, let's move on to, you've done the investigation, you've kept the wolves at bay, but there's a lot of pressure, you saw it, to wrap up an investigation as quickly as possible. Yep. Even if it means you don't have all the information in. How do you get people to understand? I mean, you're in a great position in that the report doesn't have to be written until you say it's ready to be written.
Right.
But most compliance officers do have management breathing down their neck and everybody else wanting to know.
Right.
What have you found, and I guess this is going back to your days when you were at Cadwallader and working with clients, to let people know you got to be patient here?
I think it's very important. Again, this goes to what we talked about earlier about managing expectations and expectations externally and internally. There's always going to be this balance of when have you hit the finish line? You can always keep drilling for more oil elsewhere or going down various trails as the investigation goes on. Some of them may be fruitful, some may not, but you've got to at some point say, we've got what we need.
We've answered those original questions.
We answered those original questions. We thought about the other ones. Maybe we'll pick them up later, but we're done. And it's hard sometimes for you, for the team, to say, I really would love to know the answer to that other question, but you know what? leadership, in my case, the leadership of the department, in compliance context, leadership of the business organization, they do need to know the answer. The public needs to know the answer, in my case. And you've got to then move it forward. On the other hand, you can't issue a report, you can't finalize your work, report out orally, if you're not convinced that you've looked everywhere you think you would be expected to have looked by the people you're reporting out to, and by your own team and by your own standards. It's very important to do that. And so, for example, again, I've testified to this publicly on the election review matter. Had we said, we're going to finish this in 1 year and we're going to issue it in January or February 2018, because that was 1 year from when we started, we wouldn't have found all the relevant text messages and we wouldn't have found some of the classified information that we've referenced in the report. Two very important areas of the review. And so you can't go in with an artificial deadline. You can go in with a target, and I think that's actually very important to do, but you've got to understand it's a target. And when you get to that point, hopefully you're at the point where you can say you're done. But if you still think, gee, I just heard these, I need to interview a handful of more people, or I think there are these other messages out there that I haven't gotten yet, you got to do that, because the consequence of not doing it is you issue a report that can be easily undercut by the evidence you never collected.
So how should the report be written? You told a great anecdote about that at lunch today that I think was very instructive.
So we just had a 40th anniversary event, because this is the 40th anniversary of the IG Act. And by the way, if you want to see any of what I'm about to talk about, it's on our website at ignet.gov. And Bob Woodward spoke at our 40th anniversary event in July. And the reason we had Bob Woodward speak is the IG Act was passed in 1978 as a post-Watergate reform. And who better to speak about those issues than someone who obviously uncovered many of them. So at the presentation, it was right after the report had been released on the election review. And Bob Woodward noted how we like to write things in a very mundane way, not flowery. We don't use adjectives. We write very flat. And then commented about our report title and how we enjoyed our report title, which is a report about the actions of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Department of Justice, in advance of the 2016 presidential election, and how he had wished he had thought of that as a title, because he came up with all the president's men. But instead, the title could have been how the committee to reelect the actions of the committee to reelect the president in advance of the 1972 presidential election, and how that might have been an even snappier title.
It's a great story. But then obviously when it comes to the substance, that mundane tone
that matters. I mean, I think as compliance official, an IG, an internal auditor, you're writing to put forward the facts and the conclusions. You're not looking to take one side or the other. You don't want the reader to think, boy, they think this is really bad because they've used really strong adjectives here, and they don't think this is as bad because they didn't use the same adjectives over there. I think as a writer, you want to lay out, you want the reader to know, obviously, there's going to be more important and lesser important findings. You want to lay out your report organizationally and in terms of the findings in a way that lets them do that. But I think as a overseer, an auditor, reviewer, bashing people over the head with strong language, probably not the best way to do it.
So the report's written, it should stand on its own, correct?
Right.
But you're going to be asked questions about it. If you're you're probably going to be up on Capitol Hill.
Maybe for 12 hours.
Right, straight before the House and or the Senate. If you're a compliance officer, you're going to get emails, calls, or maybe an extended meeting with the management or the board.
Audit committee.
Director, audit committee, whatever. What's the best way to prepare for that discussion?
You've got to know your report inside and out. Even if it was done, even if you weren't the one day-to-day doing the report, you might have been, depending upon how large your shop is and how important it is. But one of the things I do is I immerse myself in the key documents, key facts. I try and make sure I know the report in a very substantial, significant way, so that the folks I'm appearing in front of, again, most usually Congress, understand that I may not have been the one doing the interviews. I may not have been the one writing the first drafts of this, but this is in fact something I own, I understand, and that I can explain clearly and concisely to them, and again, to the public at large, particularly in my situation where we have casual observers. People don't follow our work regularly. They're coming in if they care about a particular grant, particular contract, an issue like the election review. They're coming and going. We're getting different audiences, and I've got to be able to speak to all of them. And I think that's a very important part about how you prepare for a presentation. Some people on an audit committee are going to be more aware and understanding of what a compliance officer is, what the organization is doing, much like going before the House or the Senate. Some members will be more aware than others. But it's very important to be able to speak at a broad level.
So what's the best way to handle the interaction, which may be pointed if you're delivering news people may not want to hear?
So, well, I think it's very important, first of all, and we do this. If I've got significant findings, good or bad, I've got to be the one to tell the Deputy Attorney General or the Attorney General or the FBI Director or the ATF Director, whomever it is. They need to hear it. They need to hear it from me or my deputy, one of my senior leaders. You can't shy away from that.
You can't just drop it on their desk.
You can't just drop it on their desk. They expect interaction when you find significant issues. They're going to have, hopefully, good questions. Hopefully, they'll appreciate why what you did is ultimately beneficial to the organization. That's not always obviously readily apparent when you first drop the report or make the finding. But for those of us who've done compliance work, internal audit work, you know that if you didn't find it now, it's like a cancer. It is gonna keep growing. It's gonna get worse. And so inevitably you're better off finding it when you found it than at some later point in time, or just pretending it didn't occur.
And then I think my last question is, the investigation's done. You talked about, you know, you want the report to take the organization to a better place. But the other question is, how do you make your organization better? Mm-hmm. What's the best way to, when it's all said and done, to say, geez, what did we do right, wrong here? How do we make sure that the next time we have to do an investigation like this or any other investigation, we can do it better?
Yeah. Well, I think it's important for everybody in the process to self-assess and think about it. I often do that, particularly after testifying in Congress, thinking about how could I better explain this? What's the takeaway from this in terms of the reaction we're getting, whether it's from Congress, the leadership of the department, NGOs? What's the feedback? It's often hard to get that feedback, actually, for us. People are concerned about how we'll take it. And I think it's very important that you let people know you're very open and very interested and very willing to get that feedback. And then I think you sit with the team and you talk about, you know, could we have done this in a more timely way? Let's talk about that. What are things I could have done as a leader to help facilitate that? As we're thinking about the next project, what's the staffing? Did we manage this the right way? Is the report writing process the right way? I think sitting with your team and having them know that you want that frank feedback and dialogue as a leader, that you want them to be thinking about that, and letting your stakeholders know you want that from them as well, is critical. Because I've learned one of the biggest challenges in any organization, whether it's here as Inspector General, whether it was when I was in the criminal division back 17 years ago in the front office there, frankly, when I was in private practice, it's very hard and very rare for people to be willing to go to leadership and say, I think you could have done this better, or I think you could do that better. There's just a tendency to want to do happy news only. And I think it's very important, if you want to get that kind of constructive feedback afterwards, to let people know in words and deeds that you mean it and that you're going to improve. You're going to figure out ways to take the criticisms, critiques, suggestions, constructive thoughts, and move forward in a positive way.
Well, Michael, thank you for all these insights. I think you're going to help a lot of people move forward in a positive way with their investigations as well. Thanks to all of you for taking the time to listen to this podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SECE and HDCA saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.